Hi.
Oh, can you actually hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you great.
Okay. Hold on. Make sure you're recording. Okay, I'm presuming you don't have a list.
You would be presuming correctly. Well, I mean, I have a couple of things I know has been going on. For example, I mean, you got the whole,
Let's just start.
All right, come on.
Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner, everybody. It is Thursday, August 14th, 2014, just after 2 UTC. I'm Sam Minter, and Yvonne Bo is here, and you may hear some noise because Yvonne Bo is driving in his car.
But not my car.
In a rental car.
In a rental car, yes. Okay, yeah. All right, yes, I am. I am driving in a rental car.
So we apologize in advance for sound quality issues, background noise, all that kind of stuff. Sorry. I know whenever I've recorded a solo show from the car, it's kind of sounded crappy. But we're doing the best we can, so, you know, whatever. If it bothers you, skip it and listen again next week.
It's the best we could do this week. Last week, I could record. I was, like, getting ready to go on this trip, and, you know, today I was hoping I was going to be able to get home before showtime, but I'm not even close. Let's see. I'm 331 miles out, so no.
Yeah, so, you know, and you know, because we like to keep the length of these shows down, we are going to talk to Yvonne for the entire 330 miles.
That sounds like a great idea. that would be great.
Yeah, I can't quite manage that. But, you know, so we do have a few, you know, news events and things to talk about and stuff like that. But, you know, Yvonne, I wanted to start because I think this would be interesting. And anybody who's listening who is not a Facebook friend of yours will not know.
Yes.
What the hell were you doing on your latest trip?
I have friends of mine, okay, that you actually know, we have a mutual friend, okay, Mireya, okay,
whose okay.
brother I've known for a long time, who actually owns a race car, okay, all right, they built it together with his stepfather the last couple of years, and I've known them for many years, I've known their whole family for many years. And about 4 or 5 months ago, they said, "Hey, Avi, his nickname, and my stepdad, they're gonna race the car in a 24-hour race in Virginia. Okay, well, actually, a 24-hour race. Would you like to go?" And I said, and my wife was there, and I first asked her, "Honey, are you okay if I go to race the car?" They said, she said, "Yes." Now, you know, I hadn't heard from him for a couple of months, and then they sent me an email about it, and I got a little bit behind on it because around the time that we're planning to race, my place got
closed. To be clear here, they're not inviting you to watch. They're inviting you to race.
Correct, yes. They need the next okay, all right. They, you know, it's a 24-hour race, okay? It's an endurance race, so you basically have to be, you know, doing shifts for 24 hours, driving as far as that possible around the track in order to, do as best as possible. I mean, obviously, we're trying to win, okay?
Let me understand here. So it's 24 hours of actual driving, so it's who can drive the furthest in those 24 hours?
That is correct, yes. They measure in laps, okay? All right, so they measure the laps. In order to track how far you're going, you know, around the track and be a lot of time.
So Yvonne, Yvonne, you're actually breaking up quite a bit, so I'm going to call you back on your regular cell. Okay, we'll call Yvonne right back because we can't hear him right now. Back after this. Hey, you, listeners. We know you have thoughts about the stuff we say here on Curmudgeon's Corner. You probably think we're completely wrong about many things. Or perhaps you want to tell us that we're geniuses. That's always great. Or perhaps you just want to suggest a topic for us to talk about. All of these things are wonderful. We love to hear from you. So talk to us. If you prefer email, just email Sam. That's me, your prime curmudgeon, at abulsme@abulsme.com. That's spelled A-B-U-L-S-M-E. Or tweet at us. I'm at abulsme, and Yvonne is at imbou. That's I-M-B-O-U. And while we may not do it every time, don't be surprised if we respond to you right here on the show during an upcoming episode. Thanks, everybody. We'll be looking for your email and tweets, so get right on that. And we have Yvonne back again.
Okay, all right. So it's a 24-hour race. Okay, they have some very specific rules about the cars, safety, how long each driver can drive. So the thing is that each driver can only drive for a maximum of 2 hours. Okay, number one.
So 2 hour shift.
You have to be nonstop. 2 hour shift, and you have to be out there for 24 straight hours.
Right.
And so it depends a lot also on the quality of the vehicle itself. But by the way, the race is meant to really to not be a hyper expensive race. Okay, but there are certain rules in order to try to keep the cost of the car as low as possible. But that doesn't mean skimping on safety equipment. It's a full race vehicle who's got all sorts of safety equipment. In order to do that, that part they don't skimp on. But they try to skimp on everything else. So anyway. So I signed up to this thing, and, we went out there. Now, here's one thing. Like, I had not been in a race car in a while, okay? I mean, I have been on a racetrack.
Because I remember you went to some kind of racing camp a few years ago.
Yes, I did. And I actually was with this car race and everything, and I've done other things since. But nothing ever is incentive. I had for a long time one of them. Participate in one of these races. Okay, to get invited onto a team to drive, it's tough, okay, all right? Especially because I don't have the credentials or the stuff or, so they invited me to race. I said, screw it, I'm going to do it. So one of the things that happened is that we get there and I'm looking at the weather forecast. They're forecasting rain. And they're not just forecasting a little rain, they're forecasting rain the entire weekend. Now, look, I had raced and driven on a track in the dry. I have never raced in the rain, all right, okay, number one. And, uh-huh. And then we're talking about at night as well, okay. I was praying that there wouldn't be rain. And I'm thinking, the weather forecast is going to be wrong, it'll be fine. So Friday, which is a practice day, they had forecasted rain. It was dry all day, so I went on the track during the day. I practiced, I felt really good, I'm like, this is going to be pretty good, I'm doing pretty good on the track, I'm getting really fast by people, so, Friday by 11 o'clock at night, it started raining, and it never really stopped raining for the whole weekend, all right? So, the race started, we were driving out there in the rain, for 24 hours, but here's another thing.
At what kind of speeds, by the way? What kind of speeds were you averaging?
The maximum speed that we got on the straightaway, as fast as the car would go, 140, 150 miles an hour.
Okay.
In the rain, a lot of people crashed, okay? I can tell you that. There's a lot of people that crashed.
Were there any injuries?
No, there were no injuries whatsoever.
That's good. The safety equipment works, huh?
The safety equipment was very good. They have very good safety crews, and the track was designed that there wasn't really any. If you crashed, there was a lot of runoff areas, so you could hit like soft areas or something or whatever. And there wasn't any, you know, there wasn't anywhere where you would hit a wall directly at high speed. You know what I'm saying? If you hit something, a wall, it would be a wall that would be on your side. It wouldn't be like a front. It was, the track was very friendly towards that, okay? So one of the good things about that track. But here's the other thing they did. They talked about it at night. Listen, in the rules, it stated that, yes, the track is not lit. However, it said that they would have construction lights at the big corners, okay? So I'm like thinking, cool, okay, you know, so fine. So it's not lit up in the straightaway, but, you know, if I'm getting to the corner, I can see lights, okay, no problem. There are no such lights put out whatsoever. Not one damn light. It was completely freaking dark.
Just your headlights.
Just the headlights, yes. That's it. And the other part is that I didn't realize how many cars were going to be in the race. There were 93 cars in the race. Right? I mean, that's a lot of cars, okay, on a racetrack, okay? Well, look, I will say this. I got in the car, like, the day was pretty, you know, was pretty good. I did go off the track a few times, okay, by the way. During the day, when I was first getting used to being wet and driving out there, because I practiced in the dry, I couldn't even get it. It wasn't even the next by practice. But the bottom line is, but at night, I actually drove a lot better than I thought I was going to do, especially in the wet. And our team, which had no professional drivers on it, wound up being in 11th place out of the 93 cars, okay? And the guys that were in front of us, for the most part, had professional drivers with sponsors in them, okay? We did not. So we did quite incredibly well in the race. But it was one of the craziest things I've ever done in my life. I mean, I think it you saw the video I posted.
I actually didn't see
how it was at night.
I saw the pictures. I didn't see the video.
You need to see the video, okay, all right, of how it was at night, okay, all right? Because I did put a video, just so you get an idea. I mean, it was just rain. I mean, it was pouring rain. Then it got foggy. Then it was completely pitch black, okay? So imagine, you know, you're driven like this, right? Okay, you know, hard enough to drive at a regular pace. We're driving at speeds over 100 miles an hour in this stuff.
So now you mentioned you have 2-hour shifts. How many people were on your team?
There were 6 people on my team. I did 4 hours of racing. I raced 2 hours in the afternoon, and then I raced between 1 and 3 in the morning.
So it was like 2 hours on and then 12 hours off and then 2 hours on again?
Yeah, but it's not completely off, because the problem is, well, we're not a professional race team. It's not like we have a crew. Listen, the car needed to be refueled every time stop, okay? So we needed to refuel. We had a series of checks, you know, that we did. We actually had some equipment in there to keep people, despite the fact the weather was, listen, it's incredibly exhausting, okay, all right, to drive at that level for that long a time. The temperature outside was 65 degrees, and you were still sweating like crazy, okay, all right? So there was some equipment inside the car to cool you down, okay, all right? It's actually a shirt with, like, pipes that run through it, and actually you put ice and water in a thing, and it actually runs cool water through the shirt, so you stay cool. Because you're wearing a helmet, a fire suit, and all this stuff that's very hot, so that keeps you cool. So you have to service that every 2 hours. You have to check the tires. You have to check the oil. You have to check, you know, you have to make sure. I mean, the cars needed to be out there for 24 hours. So I couldn't just go, and, like, I did take a rest break at some point, okay? But you needed to be out there all the time. Just in case the car had to come in for an emergency or something or whatever. We were lucky that the car ran perfectly well the entire race. I mean, there were other teams that had to fix their cars, like, right there on the spot and do a whole bunch of other stuff. So we actually had a flawless my friends had run this race 3 times before, and either due to mechanical reasons or to the drivers, like just exhaustion, they had not finished their race. So, you know, this is the first time that they were able to finish the race.
So now, you'd posted you were up 24 hours straight, but you did have a little bit nap in there somewhere.
I tried, but I really didn't.
Okay.
Because here's the thing.
I remember a few weeks back we were talking, and you said you hadn't done an all-nighter in a long time, so I guess you have now.
now I am. Look, I tried to lie down on a... Okay, we had a hotel room that actually sat right on front of the track, okay? So I tried to lie down in bed at least to get some rest, okay? All right, so before I did my stint of driving. The thing is that the cars are incredibly loud. They're running right in front of the room. I mean, I lied down in the bed, and I did lie down to rest, but I didn't get any sleep because all you heard is, like, the sound of screaming race cars going right in front of the room.
Right.
So I really didn't get much of any sleep, you know. And I'll say this, talk about all-nighter. Listen, I went, after the race was over, I wound up driving to D.C. afterwards. And, I mean, I didn't get to sleep until, like, 10 o'clock the next day. So I basically stayed up 38 hours straight, basically.
Good job, Yvonne.
Yeah.
And now you're driving from Virginia to Miami. From D.C. to Miami.
From D.C. to Miami, yes. Correct.
That's a long drive.
So, yeah. That is a long drive.
And I take it you're doing that drive in one shot.
I decided that I'm going to freaking complete it in one shot, yes. I have never actually finished it before in one shot. But I guess it's the first week for everything, I guess. I don't know. But that's screw it. I'm going to do it this time in one shot.
Okay.
So that was like, Here my GPS and my other.
So bottom line, you had fun.
Oh, we had a great time. I mean, and you know, it's like, I mean, I got to tell you, I mean, it's one of those things that I always wanted to do that in my life. I mean, it's great. I mean, there's no other thing to say about this. I mean, you know, but our team did really well. We all did very well. I'm really proud of the fact, I mean, we didn't just finish, but I mean, the fact that when I realized that the guys all in front of us were all, for the most part, like, a lot of them were like professional race drivers, and we managed to finish where we did, I was like, damn, we really did good. I mean, so yeah, I mean, it was, that was something, I'll tell you what, I always, as Sam knows, I've always liked cars, I've always been crazy guy with the cars. I mean, this is just one of those things that, you know, it's one of my passions, and I always wanted to do it, and I wasn't expecting to get called to do this, and when they said to do it, I was like, yeah, I'm like, you know, yeah. I mean, it was, like, a great thing that I did, so.
You gonna do it again?
Yeah, but crazy. I would like to try it again. I would like to try again because I think we could have done even better than what we did. So I would like to try again. Okay, so yes, I would say that if I had the opportunity, I would try to do it again. Okay, so we were extremely close. If we had made a couple of mistakes in our tactics, we would have been in the top five, which would have got another trophy. And we just had a couple of tactical mistakes that we did that part of them were out of frustration because the other guys that have been in the race, they kept saying, well, we never finished. It doesn't matter. I'm like, hey, and then they realized, damn it, you can't finish. And if they would have not had that negative experience before, we probably would have switched our, they would have followed the tactic that I was pushing, but they were like, you know, it's one of those things. You did it before, and it's like, there's no way. Because I was like, one of the things that happened is when Carl was right in front of us, for example, I kept saying that it was going to break down. There's no way that car was going to finish the race. They were going way too fast. I said, there's no way. And the guy said, you're out of your mind. You're doing great. There's no way. And like about an hour later, also I see it being thrown into the pit area. And I asked them what happened. They said our engine exploded. We're out of the race. And we could have raced harder before that, which we didn't, because we didn't think we could catch up. So, you know. But anyway, enough of my craziness, you know. And now, of course, my craziness, of course, yes, I'm trying to make it now to my house in like one drive, one shot to cover the 1,000 miles in one drive.
You're out of your mind, Tom.
Yes.
Anyway, I think glad you had a good time. Let's take another break, and I will take Alex, who is now licking the microphone, back downstairs, and then we'll be back and we'll talk about some other stuff. We'll be back. We'll be back right after this. Okay, Alex, let's go.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, we're back.
All right. So, by the way, I forgot to mention to you, I did see our friends Chris and Rebecca while I was in D.C. I did take some time to do that. But our friend Alda Herbert refused to crawl out of his cave.
Yeah.
So, I did try, but he sent one of his usual cryptic emails and.
But I try to call him, I try to draw him out, no response. I'm sure he's planning an attack or something, probably. I don't know, yeah, so what's state are you in at the moment anyway?
I am in Florida already.
Oh, you're already in Florida. Okay, but Florida is a big state. Florida is a big state.
But Florida is quite a big state, yes. As a matter of fact, it's the longest of all the states that I've had to drive through, so yes. Okay, but I am in Florida already, okay? So I am actually in Jacksonville, Florida, lovely Jacksonville, Florida, which if you recall a couple of months ago, we tried to do a podcast from here, and it was pretty difficult. As a matter of fact, so, but I am crossing through Jacksonville, Florida right now. So,
anyway, so we have a few real issues going on this week. So let me do a rundown of a few of these, Yvonne, and you could pick which one you like to do first.
Okay, all right, let's do this. Okay.
We, of course, we have Robin Williams and the larger issue of suicides in general. There's some more stuff there. We have there was a story about a kid who wanted some pies at a store, and somebody bought the pies. I don't know if you read anything about that.
I did read about that, but I just thought that was strange.
I made a quick little trip into Canada too, but I don't have anything really to say about it. And we talked about your vacation for a while, so I'm not going to say anything there. We of course have continuing escalation in Iraq. We have the situation.
Before we start talking about Iraq, I think that would be a good thing to talk about a little bit, because I had a couple of things, you know, especially given the developments that have happened, that I want to talk about. Around that subject.
Okay, let's just go ahead with that, and I'll finish my list when we're picking the next topic. So,
yeah, well, we're picking the next topic, yeah.
So, Iraq. Yeah. I talked a little bit about Iraq last week, but you weren't here, so let's get your take first, and of course, things have happened since last week as well.
Of course, there's been a whole bunch of developments. Here's the key thing that's my takeaway about Iraq, like, right now at this point. I mean, you know, there's been all these people criticizing the American reaction. And then, yeah, I've heard a whole bunch of people criticizing, well, this whole problem wouldn't have happened if we had been aggressive in Syria. And I'm like, I keep going, okay. So I'm like, I'm thinking about this, but I go, wait a minute. So let's take the Syria aspect, right? Because ISIS came out apparently out of some of the groups that were apparently fighting the Assad regime in Syria, right? How about this? Most people were advocating that we armed the rebels, right? So if we had active...
I believe I saw on Twitter earlier today, or yesterday, I should say, ISIS posted some of the pictures of their leaders posing with John McCain.
Yeah, isn't that freaking special, you fucking McCain dumbass? Which is the reason why I'm completely against freaking supporting the rebels, because I'm bigger than these assholes hated our guts. Okay? So, you know, my whole thing about this, which is why I kept saying that we need to stay out of Syria, because the two options were, you're going to support a whole bunch of people who are really against you, or you're going to support the prick of a thought. Which asshole do you want to support? So proven completely true. Here's the other part, right? So we're talking about, everybody's talking about how, well, we need to support Iraq and, you know, whatever. But I'm like, here's the problem. The reason why the Iraqis turned into such fucking weaklings that couldn't defend themselves is because the freaking Iraqi government refused a security deal with us. And we finally had to say, well, you don't want us? Fine, we're leaving. Okay? So now the same morons that told us that they did not want a security deal with us now want us to save their asses.
Well,
okay?
And like that wasn't predictable.
But it's just so retarded. Okay, all right. So we, it's not like we could have done anything from that aspect either. So, I mean, you know, the only guys that are our friends over there really are the Kurds, which, you know, we were helping, okay? But, I mean, there wasn't any of these freaking morons that we could have really helped to try to stabilize. Stabilize what? And here's the other thing I say about this. Oh, my God, the world is so unstable now. These people have such short memories, man. I mean, in the 90s, we had the whole Somalia thing exploding. We had the Yugoslavia war. We had the Rwanda genocide. I mean, they keep going over conflict. Listen, this has been more than norm. We had a period where we had less conflict for a little bit of time. Okay? Than normal.
Doggy.
Ready for the test, Dracula? I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then let us begin.
Creepy Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, you still there, Yvonne?
Yeah. Okay, I'm still here.
Okay, so...
Okay, so anyway, so what I was saying is that, you know, we've had probably a period of more an abnormal peace or a certain period in certain instances in certain parts of the world, okay? This is like, I mean, you know, and we can't... I mean, everybody keeps saying, well, we need to do something. So do what? Who are we supporting? What? Assad? What? The other guy that want to kill us? What, the regime that doesn't want us to help him? What exactly are you supposed to do? And that's what really frustrates me about all the criticism about foreign policy. You got all these fucking people talking about this, and I'm like, okay, could you mind telling me which of those fucking options is such a great option? Because I really don't see any of them other than observe, contain, try to understand, bring intelligence, provide humanitarian aid, help about the only allies we have there, which are the Kurds and the Israelis. And I mean, even though the Israelis are going to build a whole bunch of shit that's driving crazy, but, you know, they don't want us dead. So, I don't know. I mean, it's a very difficult situation, and there aren't a lot of crucial things that we can do that would provide a positive outcome for us doing any of these things. You know, like somebody was talking today. I mean, honestly, you know, somebody was down, I know all the street advocating, if we put troops down on the ground against ISIS, they'd probably use it as a freaking recruiting mechanism. I mean, it probably just makes things worse.
You know, my bottom line on all these things, and I know I sound like a broken record on this, and it's very similar to what you're saying, is that, you know, in order for me to be for intervention, I have to hear a really, really compelling case that somehow our intervention is going to make things better. And by make things better, I usually mean less people are going to end up dead. And
we're going to support somebody that's allied to us, whose interests are aligned. For the Kurds, for example. Listen, if the Kurds says, listen, guys, we need help, they're going to overrun us. Well, I would say, okay, you know, we can help them. Their interests have been aligned. with ours for a very long time. See, and they've been supportive of our efforts of security. So, okay.
Now, I hear that. I think I would be more reluctant even then, because I would want to hear, you know, yeah, okay, by supporting
I'm overly simplifying the case.
No, I know what you're saying, but I'm saying, like, even supporting the Kurds, I am not convinced that if you pick any side, even the side that we like, that the end result isn't just, in the end, more death and destruction all around. And like, one of the things where I have this crazy notion that I think it's bad even when the enemy dies. We just shouldn't, you know, killing people is bad, you know? And so, you know, and I just see, like, when you have a conflict like this, if you inject resources into it, we're shipping weapons to the Kurds.
We're just making it worse. We're just making it worse. We're putting in more guns and more weapons, and we're just freaking making the whole thing worse because, you know, the some of the guys in you know, like in Iraq are just going to use it as an excuse to slaughter the other people they hate anyway. They're not using it in a positive light. They're making it so they can get to whatever their advantage is, and usually the advantage they feel they're going to get is like by killing somebody else they hate.
And of course, it's been pointed out that a good deal of the weapons ISIS is using today are weapons that we gave the Iraqis that they took over at one point or another.
Right.
I mean, so, like, even, you know, any of these efforts to pick a side and help that side, I think they backfire in the end. You know, frankly, you know, even if that side ends up somehow ascendant, you know, the process of getting there involves them killing a lot of people, and the fact that you're throwing more resources and weapons and everything else into it is just going to make the whole conflict last longer and be worse.
We've never made it better. We've never made it better there by doing anything. Look at in the 80s, for example, when we helped the Mujahideen against the Russians. What did those people turn into? Those fucking people turned into the ones that attacked. That went to turn into Al Qaeda, turn into the Taliban, turn into we got it September 11th. It never, ever has helped them.
Well, and okay? I was just reading, I was rereading actually. I remembered it as I was reading it. I tweeted this link, an account of a set of interviews with Obama back in January. And one of the things that was recounted in this article, let me get the quote on it real quick. It's Going the Distance, which was by David Remnick, which was in The New Yorker, I believe, back in January. And anyway, one of the things he talks about is specifically this. When he was contemplating what to do in Syria, one of the things Obama did is ask the CIA. You know, a lot of people were telling him, arm the rebels, arm the rebels, arm the rebels. Obama asked the CIA to come back and give him a report on times in U.S. history where we've armed the rebels and it's turned out okay. And they basically came back with jack shit.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
I mean, it's not like we haven't done it a dozen or more times in a whole bunch of different countries, but it's always
never worked.
Exactly. And frankly, I think, you know, injecting ourselves into something as opposed to just sending weapons is even worse.
Even worse.
Because again, like, okay, let's take your hypothetical. The Kurds are getting overrun. We like the Kurds. The Kurds are good folks. We're going to go in and we're going to defend the Kurds, and we're going to do exactly what Obama doesn't want to do and do whatever it takes. Air power, ground troops, whatever, we'll defend the Kurds. You know, again, we're just going to end up inflaming the situation in the area for a generation to come. You know, because there's no way to get out of that without killing all kinds of people. And, you know, they're the enemy. But, you know, you're meddling in somebody else's affairs. Fundamentally, end of story. You've got a bunch of people there who, for whatever reason, don't like each other. And I would love to be able to wave a magic wand and make everybody happy to each other and save people from dying. Like, you know, we've got these heartbreaking stories of... I'm going to mangle the pronunciation. The Yazidi, who've been caught on that mountain, and you know, reports of up to 100,000, perhaps at one point. It's less than that now.
But it's far less people. It's not nowhere nearly that much, and apparently they're not in as much danger as we thought they were.
Well, a lot of them have escaped to Syria. Blah blah blah. There's still many caught. And you know, you get these.
There's thousands, but there's not a. There's thousands. There's not 100,000. I mean, that was like the night. That was like.
Regardless of the numbers, it's absolutely heartbreaking because they're just being slaughtered. There's all kinds of innocent quote unquote civilians, their kids, their women, their whatever, you know, and they're just getting slaughtered. And you see these pictures of like, you know, the one that got to me the most was there was a picture on the helicopter of a mother and her child. And the caption talks about how for a short time, her child was separated from her while they were trying to evacuate on the helicopter. And at the very last minute, you know, they got reunited with the kid. So they both went on the helicopter as opposed to getting separated. And, you know, and the woman was in tears. The child was sort of just sitting on a lap saying, hey, this is fun. But,
helicopter ride. Yeah.
You know, I mean, the kid was like 3 or something.
Yeah. I know.
But, you know, it's absolutely heartbreaking. And if I was convinced there was something we could do to just go in, get those people, make them safe without affecting anything else, by all means, let's do that. Now, I just saw, like, within the hour or so before we started recording, you know, Obama did send 150 special forces onto that mountain to evaluate the possibility of a rescue mission. And they
basically said that they're all fine. The humanitarian aid that we received is fine. It's not as many people. That's what I was hearing reported. There weren't nowhere nearly as many as we thought there. And
I heard it not only wasn't necessary, but if it was necessary, there wasn't a real good option to do that. And but we could continue with humanitarian aid. But you know, the humanitarian stuff, if we can do it sort of semi innocently without inflaming things. Okay, let's drop some food.
We're giving people food, water. I mean, Jesus Christ, for God's sake. If we can't do that without the trouble, then what the fuck can we do, for God's sake?
Right, but
I'm not okay with avoiding, like, military intervention and something, but Jesus Christ, you got people that have no food or water? Somebody could have taken that the wrong way? Well, gee whiz, go fuck yourself. My God.
Right, but that's But all of that is a whole different thing than picking sides, getting involved, and one of the things I mentioned last week, you know, we start out very limited. Okay, we're going to have some airstrikes against Islamic State positions as they're threatening, the city where the consulate is at, and possibly some Kurdish positions, etc. And what you've seen, even over just the last week, is the scope of those efforts have already increased over the last week. And that's the danger here, is that it starts out as, okay, we'll just do a little bombing around the edges to help out this city and make sure it doesn't get conquered. But then when it starts getting conquered anyway, do we say, oops, oh well, or do we double down?
I think that that's one of the reasons why, you know, even Obama was, okay, let's send in special forces, let's get a real read on what the situation is on the ground, and if it merits the action that we need. And I guess it was determined that we didn't need to do all this drastic action that a lot of people have been calling for in the last couple of weeks.
I do want to say one thing, though, is like that a few people have pointed out here. There's this whole thing. We don't want boots on the ground. No boots on the ground. No boots on the ground. Well, first of all, there are boots on the ground. We have over 1,000 troops in Iraq at the moment. Residual to protect embassies, consulates, the 150 special forces we were just talking about. But it's not like we have nobody. But also, it encourages this idea that as long as we don't have quote unquote boots on the ground, it's not a war. It's a freak. If we're dropping bombs, it's a war. We are involved in warfare, and we should treat it as such. And you know, either we're serious enough about it to get everybody on board and say, okay, we're doing this, we're going to go in there, and we're going to be involved, and blah, 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 or we shouldn't be doing it.
We have had, when the security pact fell apart with Iraq, we did arrive at a security pact with the Kurds. okay, so we've been tottering and working. I'm not sure exactly the mechanics about the pack works and what we agree, but I do want to know that a big chunk of what the strikes were intended to was to defend positions of somebody who the only freaking people that we have a security pact and an alliance, somehow of an alliance, to win. So I, you know, I'm sorry, if they are coming to us and they're the only people aligned to us, and they ask for our help, and we turn it down, then it's even worse, okay, situation.
Look, this is the thing I'm saying, you know, and unfortunately some of these commitments have already been made. You know, we get ourselves in trouble by making these commitments in the first place. If you remember from the first Gulf War, one of the criticisms of George H.W. Bush was that he promised all kinds of things to the southern Iraqis if they rose up against against Saddam Hussein. And then we went in, we liberated Kuwait, and then we pulled ourselves back and said, okay, never mind, and those people got slaughtered by Hussein. And the problem there wasn't necessarily that we pulled back. The problem is we made promises and then we didn't keep them.
Yeah, but you're comparing the open, vague promises we made to a group of people that aren't an organized government versus a military that we enabled in a region that's almost pretty much autonomous at this point.
I'm saying in both cases.
The other guys, we were just saying, hey, look, if you rise up, we'll help you. That's not the same thing. This was a formal agreement that we made with the person.
I understand that, and you know, I'm not saying that we should. My point here was not. My point was that regardless of what the situation now, the mistake was making the commitment in the first place. I don't think we should have made that commitment. Now, given that we have, should we live up to our commitments? Probably, but we should not treat that as an absolute either. Because in some cases, meeting our commitment, if we made a stupid commitment, then keeping it and keeping it would make things worse, then we should back off. But for the most part, we should keep the commitments that we have made. However, this is exactly the kind of commitment I think is incredibly dangerous. It's committing ourselves to say, we're going to help defend you if you get into trouble. And that's basically saying, we're going to get ourselves knee deep.
Dude, but that's like the principle of NATO, for God's sake.
I know, but it was also the principle of the alliances that led to World War One. You know, you got to be.
Yes, but you know.
These things are. It's often, you know. Yes, there's some logic behind sort of mutual defense treaties, primarily on the deterrence side. But once the deterrence fails, then it's a very, very, very dangerous road. I mean, and that's the whole thing of all of these, you know, all of our nuclear stockpiles, all of the NATO and the Warsaw Pact and all of these alliances, the only way they make sense is as deterrent if nobody ever does jack shit. If anybody actually breaks that line and goes to war, it's a recipe for immediate disaster.
Like I said at this point, there isn't much that we can do, like, right now. I mean, look, the Iraqis, we offered them a security pact, they rejected it. Unless the Iraqis today, like somebody was saying today, unless the Iraqi government and, like, decides that they need to protect all of Iraq and they take this seriously and it seems as an all-inclusive government, then this is not going to work. And I gotta be honest, like I've said before, I don't see any solution really that is, to be honest, forget about ISIS. Take that out of the equation. Okay? Even if I just take ISIS out of the equation. I mean, I don't see anything there that, other than the partition of Iraq, that's gonna guarantee that's gonna improve the situation at this point, even without the whole issue with ISIS at this point.
And of course, you've got this whole issue with the prime ministers in Iraq and blah, blah, blah. The one thing I want to say to sum this up is there is quite a lot in general I don't like about Obama's foreign policy. And even in this situation, I think he's actually being more aggressive than he should be, not less. I think he should be pulling back even more, not getting sucked back in here. However, as much as I dislike what Obama does, all I keep thinking is, thank God it's not John McCain.
You know, exactly right.
Or Mitt Romney, right, for that matter. Because I,
or who?
Mitt Romney.
Or Mitt Romney. Oh, my God, yeah.
I mean, because I fully believe that either one of those guys would have...
Oh, we'd be, oh, my God, we'd be up to our eyeballs right now there.
Well,
And
for that matter... You know, another one of the potential topics for today, and maybe this is a good time to take a break, but I think if Hillary had won, we would be in there as well, because she also has a lot of those interventionist tendencies.
Well, I know that she does, but yet at the same time, I keep wondering if she's just playing politics like right now because it's favorable, or is she just saying this because she really means it? I don't know. Even though I do believe that she is far more of a hawk.
More of a hawk. I don't think she's playing politics here because she's basically returning to the same thing she was saying in 2008 and earlier. While she was Secretary of State, she had to publicly follow Obama's lead. But, I mean, nothing she said in the most recent interview...
No, it's against what her track record has been. I do agree, yeah.
Right. Anyway, enough about Iraq. Let's take another break. And we'll be back in a minute, and we'll talk about something else. Maybe a few more minutes about Hillary, but we'll move on to other things, too. Back after this.
This is a break. Oh, yes, this is a break. This is a break, because no one gave me any suggestions. I told you, I warned you. So this is a break. This is a wonderful break. A wonderful break. Yes, indeed, this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yes, this is a break. Yes. This is a break. Break. Yes, this is a break. Yes, this is a break. Break. Yes, it is a break. And now the break is over.
Okay, we're back. So, just real quick on this Hillary thing. For those who don't know, this was a... interview that was published in The Atlantic by Jeffrey Goldberg, and he did a summary of the interview up front, and then published the whole text of the interview down below. And basically, you know, I'll tell you, when I was reading Goldberg's summary, you know, the immediate thought I had was, every time Hillary Clinton opens her mouth, I'm reminded of why I didn't like her in 2008. Now, to be fair, and I recommend everybody read this interview. So it is, again, published August 10th in The Atlantic. You can find it online by Jeffrey Goldberg. The title is Hillary Clinton, Failure to Help Syrian Rebels Led to the Rise of POTUS. But I will say, to be fair, when I read the whole interview, rather than Goldberg's summary, she didn't quite seem quite as rabid. I think the summary that Goldberg did very much was looking through his own view of what he would like to see. And so he was taking the bits that he liked, and he's very much, an interventionist, you know, pro 100% pro-Israel interventionist, whatever. Now, Hillary did say a bunch of this stuff. It's just, I think that summary made it sound even more so than if you read the actual interview.
Right, because exactly. You know, it depends all on the context of how you said it. I hear you.
Right. Okay. However, even having said that, reading through this, you know, you definitely, and people are saying this is, Hillary's first major attempt to distance herself from Obama, and we'll be seeing a lot more of this over the next couple years, which is absolutely true. I fully expect that to happen. But as I said, and it's certainly far more interventionist than I like, and I disagree with much of what she said in this in terms of foreign policy. But, you know, like I was saying at the end of the last segment, none of this is new. None of this is different. This is exactly the Hillary Clinton that we had in 2008 during the campaigns. You know,
She is the one. She did vote for the Iraq War in the first place. You know, I mean, it's one of the reasons why I was not for her in 2008.
Yeah, I mean, foreign policy was one of the areas where she and Obama had some significant differences, which of course makes it interesting that, you know, he appointed her Secretary of State. But again, as Secretary of State, she had to implement the policy set by the president, and she did a fairly good job of it.
Hillary, if I'm not mistaken, is an attorney by training, by education. And, you know, when you're an attorney, I mean, one of the things you do is you advocate the position of your client, wherever that is. And many times, sometimes, maybe that position is not a position that you would personally have. But, you know, you learn to argue that position as best as possible. I mean, you don't have to agree with everything that your client represents. I mean, even though you think about it. I think that's part of what made her do her job well as a Secretary of State. You know, I mean, you have to, you know, there are times that's what you do. I mean, you know, it's the role of a diplomat. I mean, it's not your opinion. You're the instrument of carrying out that policy. Not totally. I mean, you have influence over the policy, but you're not the final decider on what the policy direction is, you know?
Right. And so I think it'll be very, very interesting to see how her positions flesh out over the next couple years and how they match up to whoever ends up being her opponent on the Republican side, because it's going to be a very, very different thing if it's like, you know, Hillary versus Christie or something versus if it's Hillary versus Paul. You know, those are going to be very different races.
I don't know. You think Christie is reviving? Do you think this is a long enough time for him to do resuscitation?
Oh, Christie? I don't know. Maybe. It all depends on, but I was just picking his name out of the hat as an example. The point is, you know, that we've got various Republican candidates who present a variety of different views. Now, in foreign policy, most of them line up pretty well, except for Rand Paul, who's sort of the oddball duck on the Republican side.
Right. Now, Mike, I still try to, we're almost in November, we're going to be 2 years away from the election.
Yeah.
I still can't see who the hell the Republicans are nominating him.
Well,
how even who?
Well, you know, the latest buzz over the last month has been to recruit Romney again.
Again?
Well, there's a bunch of former Romney supporters who are mounting a draft Romney campaign. Now, so far,
I don't think Romney will run again.
Romney has so far been very clear. Every time he's being asked, he's like, no, 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 and again, no. I'm done.
Yeah, I mean, if he were leaving the opportunity open, then he would say, well, you know, because you know how these guys are. But if he's saying flat out no, you know, look, I would say it's not like Romney to vote for him, but I don't think that he would flat out go and say that if he really didn't mean it.
Yeah, well, you know, this is one of the things where, you know, it depends how chaotic things are. I think this is going to be one of those races. You remember last time in 2012. Where we kept hearing over and over again, when we had the clown car full of Republican candidates and all of these debates, people kept looking, come on, is somebody else going to jump in? Please, somebody. And the closest we got was Rick Perry.
Yeah, then we got Rick Perry. That worked out well.
Perry's running. Nobody's officially declared anything, but Perry's been making all kinds of moves like he's running.
Okay, so Perry's been making the moves to run.
Hello, this is Sam from about 48 hours after we originally recorded the show. And of course, there's one news event that affects what we just said about Rick Perry, which is he just got indicted for a couple of things related to some potentially corrupt activity. So that might affect his plans. Anyway, back to the show.
I don't know. I mean, he's also a traffic accident. I mean, you know, it just seems to me, it's kind of weird. I mean, it's just, none of these guys have any firm convictions, except Paul.
No. A bunch of them have Well, a lot of them are mushy, like you say, but a lot of them do have firm positions. I mean, like if we're talking like, you know, Ted Cruz or Paul Ryan or these.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's what I mean. Except the gadflies that can't unify a party. The other guys are just mushy all over the place. Even like, for example, because one of the guys who was the darling for like Rubio, right? Okay. Well, Rubio at first was like hardline, and then he's been moving to the middle, and then he's moving all over the place. So I'm like, I can't tell exactly what the hell he wants.
Well, let me give the list of, again, sort of the ones that there have been the most polling about, at least in my state-by-state stuff that I keep track of, which isn't necessarily the same as the front runners, but it's certainly the ones the pollsters think are worth paying attention to. The ones that have most polling right now are Christie, Paul, Bush, Ryan, and Cruz.
Maybe Ryan.
Now it may well be that it ends up being none of these guys. Somebody else could start emerging. I mean, we got Huckabee in there. You know, we got we mentioned Perry. We mentioned Rubio. You know, there are a bunch of other guys. Jindal, Santorum. Yeah, there are a bunch of guys that potentially could throw their hats into the ring here. But you know, none of them. You know, but we still have a completely wide open race. We don't have anybody, really like everybody saying, "Oh yeah, of course, it's going
to
be this guy."
Romney always, to me and to you and me, always seemed like kind of inevitable. Okay, all right, in the last campaign.
Yeah,
and so did McCain in the previous one. Okay. Right. But there's like no one that I see in any of these like right now that seems inevitable. You know what I'm saying?
No, and even in those cases, I mean, inevitable with quotes. There are lots of things that could have happened, but they seemed like.
But this had like the establishment, the momentum, money, something, right?
Even at this point, 2.5 years out, those are the names we're talking about. And of course, and 2.5 years out on the Democratic side in 2008, we were talking about Hillary a lot, but we were also mentioning Obama as a possibility.
Obama, right? And it's the thing. I'm like, we're 2.5 years out, and we're freaking sure about Hillary on the Democratic side. But damn, you talk about the Republicans that I can't. There. It's so weird at this point.
And so the thing I was mentioning, just to go back to a question, you know, like I was mentioning how it would be odd for Hillary versus Rand, and I just wanted to mention one thing I retweeted yesterday from an account called Pour Me Coffee. Just said, you know, a Hillary versus Rand debate will be so weird it should be produced by David Lynch with people in animal heads just walking around on stage. You know, because, you know, what would you have here? You'd have, you know, Rand Paul giving the sort of, they don't like the word isolationist, the non-interventionist foreign policy view, where you'd have Hillary being the hawk on everything. And so you've got, you know, whereas the normal pattern in past presidential elections are the Republicans are the hawks.
Right.
You know, but that would not be the case in that mix. And you'd have a lot of cases, there'd just be a lot of issues because Rand Paul isn't your typical current mainstream Republican. If he was the nominee, there would be a lot of things distinctly different from other debates that we've seen in the past between Republicans and Democrats. And it would just be fun and interesting to watch. And like I've said before, like, you know, I don't, there are a lot of things I don't like about Hillary. There are a lot of things I like about Rand Paul, but there are a lot of things that trouble me about him as well. So, like, that would be a, you know, if we had Hillary versus Rand, I'd be like, okay, who else is running? What who's the third party candidate? Because I don't really want to vote for either of them, probably. If the Libertarians nominate Johnson again, maybe I'll do that. But, but it'd be a very interesting race just because the dynamics are different. And, you know, the longer we go without an establishment GOP candidate sort of looking like they're the standard bearer, then the better Rand's chances are. You know, it's still a wide open can.
I know.
Because basically the scenario that I've predicted for years here is we're going to have the typical situation where the Republican establishment gets behind somebody and then they roll to a lead, and all of the a little bit more extreme people like Rand Paul, I like some of the extreme things he does, but he's still extreme. If you don't have sort of those type of folks splitting off the non-establishment part of the Republican Party, and instead of one big guy and seven dwarves, where the big guy ends up winning no matter what, if you just have eight dwarves... Then anything could happen. One comparison, of course, is the last time we had a seven dwarves scenario that people actually used those terms. They said Snow White and the Seven Dwarves was 1992 when Bill Clinton emerged. Because Bill Clinton was a nobody, and all of the
people... Bill Clinton was a total nobody.
Bill Clinton was a nobody. All of the people that everybody expected to run declined to run for whatever reason, mainly because they thought George H.W. Bush would be invincible.
Was unbeatable, right?
And so you ended up with a bunch of little guys, and, you know, Clinton ran away with it. And we'll see, like, does one of these guys that we've been talking about so far end up, you know, having a charismatic streak that suddenly we are like, whoa, look at them.
The problem is, Rick Perry just sticks his foot in his mouth, just the stupid crap all the time. I mean, my God, he makes Joe Biden look like a freaking non-gas machine. I mean, that's my thing with this. I mean, I'm just like... About Perry, I really still don't think that Jeb is going to run. I really don't.
And you know, here's the other thing that I should mention, that of course is a huge factor in these things and completely unknowable 2.5 years in advance, is what the hell happens with the economy between now and then, and are there any complete foreign policy meltdowns between now and then? Because, you know, even though it's two new candidates, there's no incumbent running, what happens to the incumbent in terms of what's going on in the world matters a lot, because people do think about party. So, like, if in the next 2 years the economy goes to shit and we've got a string of foreign policy disasters, one after another, then the Democrat is going to have a hard time no matter what Yahoo runs on the Republican side.
Exactly. Well, I think that in the foreign policy front, I mean, things are going to muddle along a lot, like where they are right now. I really don't think that a lot of that will happen. I will tell you the bigger wild card is the economy, and I will tell you that the reason I say that is because you've got a lot of Republicans that keep saying now the Federal Reserve, before the Federal Reserve could do no wrong. Now the Federal Reserve is the devil incarnate that is in cahoots with the destruction of our economy, blah, 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 whatever bullshit the Republicans now want to say, basically, because the only reason they say that is because the economy has been improving and muddling along. Yeah, it's not growing at the rate that anybody wants, but it's not. It's not also crashing either, and the deficit is down, and, you know, how could you say anything good about that? Now, the problems that you're talking about, we keep talking about the fact that the Fed has maintained interest rates low, even built a debt, all right? We're talking about closing in on 6 years after the crisis, and rates are at historic lows. And there's a lot of Republicans that keep saying, you know, that this is, you know, basically anti-American, that they're wrecking the economy by doing this, blah, 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 blah. A whole bunch of crap. The problem is that, okay, the Fed has been, like, toying right now with raising rates, okay, all right? The reality is that the last time that we raised rates, okay, in such a degree, what wound up happening is 2008, okay? even to this day, with rates being as low as they are, banks still aren't lending out a lot of money, all right? So I have this feeling that the Fed, you know, Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the other thing that's been pointed out, and you can, of course, correct me if I've heard incorrectly here, is as lackluster as it has been, and as jobless as it has been, at this point, we've had one of the longest recovery runs in the post-war period. And
yes.
We're kind of due for another recession.
And the thing is that, you know, everybody's saying it's lackluster. Listen, we lost so many jobs before. There has been a lot of jobs created. But it's just, we lost so many in the crash that it's just, I mean, it's taken forever to recover from before that. And I know that the quality of the jobs that are being created are not at the level that they were before. But people keep forgetting that a lot of the jobs that were created were fucking hocus pocus, man. Look, when Bush took over in 2001, it was after the dot-com implosion. There have been quite a lot of job losses. It was after September 11th. And as a matter of fact, he didn't start creating jobs until 2003, 2004. And the problem was that a lot of the jobs created under the first Bush administration, were not great jobs. They were in freaking construction, real estate. Everything was almost all around the damn freaking boom that went bust, okay? They were not quality jobs. There were a lot of them, and they paid a lot because when people were making a lot of money on that bubble, what was the bubble burst, they all went away. Yes, there were a lot of jobs that disappeared. Yes, a lot of things happened, but the reality is that right now, we went through the worst economic downturn since the Great Depression. It's going to take a long time for things to recover. But here's the other worst part. Europe is still in a bad economic situation. They haven't crawled out from since that period. I mean, Portugal just had their largest bank go bankrupt, and it freaked the shit out of everybody, okay? Because nobody saw it coming, okay? And, you know, they're saying now that Germany is spinning into a recession, especially because they were doing so much business with Russia, and the whole crisis with Russia now has thrown the German economy into the crapper. So, I mean, if the Fed starts raising rates, what the hell is that going to do? I don't know. You are right that before the next election, if the Fed yields to a lot of the pressure they're getting, and they start raising rates the way they are, they may wind up tipping the U.S. into a recession before the next election. Now, the question that I've got, of course, is who the hell is going to get the blame, because the Republicans have been the ones that have been advocating that the Fed fights.
Account information.
Hey, we have this connect. So I would say that they keep the Republicans keep laughing that they want the Fed to raise rates. But I guarantee you something. They're not going to take the blame if the economy dips into recession because of what they're fucking banging the gavel for right now. I'll tell you that.
I mean, what?
Usually the president gets the blame.
Yeah, I mean, what happens? And even you might get a few, like, if Congress was somewhat involved in it, you might get a few congressmen getting in trouble. But yeah, the president's going to get the blame no matter what happens, because the way the public thinks about these things, they don't look in a sophisticated way at who's actually responsible for what and who took this action and how did it all play out. They say, you're president, you're in charge. It happened on your watch.
Right.
If we have a major economic downturn, or frankly, even a minor economic downturn between now and November 2016, that's the scenario where, the Republicans can win.
Now, on the flip side, this is what keeps happening, because the rest of the world keeps being weak, and because people are scared of putting their money elsewhere, they keep pouring money into the U.S., okay, which keeps our economy doing better, because, like I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, I was talking about Argentine debt. I mean, where the fuck do you want to put your money? You want to give your money to the Russians? You want to give it to us? Who do you trust? And I'll tell you what, they trust us, because the Russian government has tried like 7 bond auctions this year and has had to cancel them all because nobody wanted to buy their damn bond. Okay?
So, I don't know why you wouldn't trust Vladimir.
You know, why wouldn't you trust that loan Vladimir a few billion?
Yeah.
How he get out? So, yeah, I mean, you know, that's the thing. I mean, you know. Imagine, hey, take some Russian government bonds ruled under Russian government law. There you go. Beautiful. Try to dispute that way, you don't get paid.
Right.
So, you know?
So anyway, there's 2014 for you, or 2016 for you, and yet again, we've talked about it way in advance. I'll just mention before we take a break and move on to the next topic, I haven't had a chance to really do anything with my election site other than add a few polls in the last month or so since I made my last batch of changes. But I'm almost ready to sort of officially launch it and start, tracking it and making blog posts about it and stuff like that. There are a handful of additional things that I want to do before I do that. I want to separate out the automatic tweets so they go to a separate Twitter account. There are a few other things I want to do. I've got a list somewhere. But basically, my target is I want to officially launch this thing close to the November elections this year. I haven't decided yet whether I want to do it right before or right after, or whether I'll just say screw it and launch it in September or something. But my internal head process is that November is my deadline. I'm going to continue sort of putting on the tweaks I want to put, and maybe adding a few additional pieces of functionality if I have time. And if I'm fully satisfied with where I am, I'll go ahead and launch it. But if I hit the beginning of November 2014, it's getting launched wherever it is. It's launchable now. I just have, like I said, I have a few things I want to do yet. We're still a long way out, and we're still just gaining, we've got a lot of states where we still don't have polling so far. But so far, against every Republican in the field, every new poll,
Hillary wins.
Well,
I know.
Hillary wins, but more than that, the more polling there is, the bigger her lead looks.
I know.
A lot of that is still just like I said, there's lots of places where there still hasn't been any polling. So it's just saying that she's doing better than the average of the last 5 presidential elections. But still, the more polling we get, the better she looks. We haven't yet gotten a real movement, towards any of these Republicans saying, oh, yeah, this guy's looking more competitive than he was last month. It just every time I put in a new poll, practically, it's more states moving towards Clinton, So we'll see. We're still long, long, long way out. And there's still, things are sparse enough. I wouldn't bet based on any of my numbers on my thing yet. And again, my whole thing, it's like Nate Silver does an actual forecast. He takes in the polling and then adds all kinds of other factors in to make a model of what will actually happen in November 2016. That's not what I do at all. What I do is a snapshot of where things look like today. And where things look like today is going to be very different than where they look like 2 years from now. But I think it's still instructive to see where things are today, because it tells you, it tells you that any Republican going up against Hillary has a lot of work to do.
No doubt about it.
And, it's not saying they can't do that work. They might be able to do that work, and if the economy tanks, it'll help them a lot. But they've got a long way to go at the moment. So Anyway, that's it for that. Let's take a break, and we'll be back, and we'll mention at least a few other things. Back after this.
Load up fuel for a second.
Okay.
So let me
go
let
pump
me,
gas.
Let me put in gas because I don't know. I was accelerating the car and it was like, I think the fuel's got water in it.
Lovely. Okay. Tell me when you're ready again.
Hold on. Okay, hang on. Yeah, but stay on there for a second. I'll refuel. I'll be right back. Hang on.
Glug, 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 ding. Yvonne pumped himself some gas. And then we continued.
Oh, wait. No, okay. All right. Okay, so let me fire this thing back up.
Okay.
All right. Okay, good. All right. All right. I think, I don't know. There's a little bit of water in the fuel. Anyway.
Lovely.
The car is like sputtering a little bit. As I accelerated, I'm like, okay, that's not good. Anyway. All right. Okay, so let's go back. All right.
Okay. A couple of things I wanted to mention real quick. Like I do have a couple larger things, but I just wanted to mention two shorter things. One, just to see if you have any insight into this, because I saw this on the news, but I don't know anything about this, but I figured from your background, maybe you do. The presidential candidate in Brazil who died in a plane crash today.
I heard about it today, and I had not had a chance to read about it. Now, the candidate wasn't one of the two major candidates. It was from the party that was like really in third place. Okay.
Okay.
So I'm not sure yet what impact it will have. There's been a lot. There was speculation. I was hearing about this. I do think that it, in my estimation, it may tilt the election against the incumbent, okay? Because what's happened in the Brazilian elections the last couple of times, the reason why the party in power has stayed in power is because the opposition has been divided to a certain extent. And if what I think will happen, this may tilt the election against the current president, who... to a certain extent, it's been quite unpopular, especially the last couple of years. There's been quite a lot of protests around there, but, you know, one of those things, when you have your opposition divided, you know, then it becomes a little bit difficult to snatch the election away, you know?
So, to put this sort of in American political terms, it's not like you have Obama versus McCain and one of them dies in a plane crash right before the election. It's more like Perot dying in a plane crash.
It was more like if Perot died in a plane crash. That's exactly right. That is exactly right.
Okay.
You hit it right on the head. So, I mean, that could have tilted the election to Bush.
Yeah, it probably would have.
It probably would have.
So it may have a significant result, you know, anyway. Are they close to an election? What's going on there?
Yeah, they're pretty close. I can't remember exactly. It's in the next few months.
Okay. Okay, so there's that. The other, I've got two more short, smaller things to talk about, and then I was probably going to want to talk about Ferguson for a little bit. James Brady died.
Yeah, he passed away.
And he's, of course, the Ronald Reagan's press secretary who was injured in the assassination attempt against Ronald Reagan in 1980. And the interesting twist here is, of course, the coroner declared it a homicide.
80? 80? 80? No, it was 81.
81. The coroner declared it a homicide as a direct result of his... The coroner declared it a homicide as a result of his shooting in 1981.
Oh, that's weird to do that, but okay.
They said it's his death, despite the fact that it's, you know, 33 years later or whatever it is.
Was a direct result of his injuries that he received back then?
Yes. And
well,
he,
I guess, yeah.
And he never fully recovered. And it's, and so the interesting thing, of course, is this means they could bring new charges against Hinckley.
Well, I would hope they do.
So, and, well, and, you know, and I don't know. I'm not so sure I would hope they do because, you know, if you remember the result of all that, you know.
Was it eligible for parole or something sooner or something like
well,
that?
Well, here's what's happened. I mean, he was declared, you know, it was declared to be a mental illness issue. He wasn't in his right mind when it happened. He went through years and years of therapy. He's more recently, he's not out, quote unquote, but he's allowed to go on visits to his mother. You know, so he's not locked up all the time. I mean, he was in, you know, a mental hospital anyway, not in a prison. He's allowed day visits in the outside world. I don't remember the degree of supervision. But basically, you know, from all reports, you know, he's been quote unquote better for many years now. You know, they've dealt with the issues that he had in the 80s and, you know, he's not necessarily a danger to anybody
time
right
for
now.
A break.
We just had a break.
No, another break.
Just a minute. So anyway.
Another break right now.
So I
had a short break, super short break right now.
Okay.
Right now.
Let me finish the one topic.
What did I say again?
I don't know what you said.
What did I say for that?
I don't know. Anyway, I think it would actually be a miscarriage of justice if they went after Hinckley again at this point.
After we're done with our break.
Well, I don't know. I really have not thought much into it.
Okay, and because
after we're done your break.
Okay, we'll take another quick break, and then two more quick things, and then we'll wrap it up.
No, don't take me down.
Yes.
I will take myself down.
You'll take yourself down. Is there something you want to show me first?
Once you're done with work, I have a present. Waiting for you in the train room.
Okay. When I'm done, I'll come look at it.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Okay, thank you.
Goodbye.
Okay, bye. Okay. So... the one other quick article I wanted to mention, Yvonne, is I don't know if you read about this, but when I heard about this, I immediately thought of you. Have you heard about the reports of this new tick that's spreading in the east and southeast?
The new what?
Tick, the insect that lives in the woods and bites people.
No. I hadn't heard of it. What's the insect?
So the main part of the story here is the effects of the tick's bite is to make the person who was bitten allergic to red meat.
Oh, for God's fucking sake.
So basically, if this tick bites you and then you eat any red meat, you will become violently ill to the extent of potentially needing hospitalization.
Fuck. Well, well, the good news is that I will say that in where I live, or my parents will. I mean, I have not had the experience of having much of sex.
I don't think Florida's a big place for ticks. You don't live in the woods.
No. I mean, and I will say that we had a couple of complaints of some dogs with fleas and ticks, and I actually had some on the board of our condo association. I actually am having the exterminators pay for those regularly.
Yes.
Even though I haven't had a report in a long time, I still proactively go.
The reason I thought of this is, like, you know, I know you're a big red meat fan. And so I have these visions of you, like, going out for a hike on the woods for some reason and then getting bit and then going to have a steak and then realizing you're, because of this tick, you're forced to become a vegetarian.
That would be quite depressing. Can I be honest? That would be extremely so.
Now, there are some reports that the effect is not permanent.
Thank God. Okay.
But for some period of time, it essentially, you know, those people cannot eat red meat. Some of the headlines about it said that it's forcing people to become vegetarians, but not quite, actually. You could still eat chicken, you could still eat pork, you could still eat whatever, just not red meat.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Well, the red meat, well, that would be bad. Okay. Well, thankfully, I'm hoping that I will not get bit by
snakes. Okay.
Okay.
That's your goal? Okay, let's just do a quick break to separate things, and then let's talk about... We've had a couple police shootings in the last week that might be worth mentioning. We'll be back after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, here we are. So, you know, this, you know, usually, you know, when we talk about shootings on this show, it's been because some guy's gone off with a gun and shot a bunch of people.
Right.
And, you know, we had the Sandy Hook shootings. We had the guy in the theater before that. Giffords. We've had a number of these situations, and of course, these are just the ones that get lots of attention. You know, there are many people killed by handguns, shotguns, everything else every year. Both in terms of intentional homicides, suicides, accidents,
shootings, whatever.
And accidental shootings are probably the biggest of the bunch. But in any case, this one this week has been a little bit different because there have been two shootings that I know of, and maybe I'm missing some, where it's been the police against unarmed civilians. And one of these in particular...
Well, I heard about the one near St. Louis. I did hear about that. Got a lot of coverage because there's been a lot of rioting and
stuff. We're probably going to spend most of the time talking about that one. To hit the other one real quick, and I forget exactly where the other one was located, but the other one was a man who was in a Walmart, and he went to the toy section of the Walmart, and he grabbed one of the little... basically a toy gun. And was playing with it in the store, pretending to shoot people with the toy gun.
Oh, my God.
And so a police officer, you know, shot and killed him.
But this guy's an idiot.
Here's the thing. Yes, he was an idiot. But apparently there's also a lot of witnesses say that when he was being shot, you know, as soon as he saw the cop, he was like, no, it's a toy, and like held it up over his arms and held his arms up and everything, and they shot him anyway.
Oh, boy. Well.
So that's case number one, and of course, it was a young black man. I think he was like 18 or something.
What a shocker.
And so, you know, there have been all kinds of things that you can look up that say, basically, if you run that same scenario twice and have, you know, a young black man and, you know, a young white kid, you know, the cop is more likely to shoot the black guy.
Unfortunately, that's reality.
Now, that's A. B is the case near St. Louis. And in this case, this is Sam from 48 Hours in the Future again. Since we had this discussion, there have been a few more revelations that the kid who was shot was a suspect in a robbery nearby, some other things. We may talk more about this next week, but I don't really think it changes a lot about the analysis that Yvonne and I are about to give, since that event was not actually in progress when this occurred, and apparently the police officer did not know that the guy was a suspect. I mean, there's still, you know, differing stories depending on who's talking and things like that. But for the most part, it seems the preponderance of what we've heard so far in terms of witnesses align with what Yvonne and I are about to talk about in terms of what was actually happening at that moment while things were going on, regardless of whether or not the guy in question had done some minor shoplifting 10 or 15 minutes earlier. Well, a little bit more than minor shoplifting alleged. He was supposed to have bullied the shopkeeper at the 7-Eleven, or not 7-Eleven, whatever convenience store it was. So a little bit more than shoplifting, not quite armed robbery because he wasn't armed. Anyway, regardless of what happened 15, 20 minutes earlier, doesn't seem to be really relevant to what was happening right there at the moment where things happened. Anyway, back to our conversation. This is also one where, you know, I was listening to an interview on the radio with the kid who was with the guy who got shot. So the two of them were walking down the street. And apparently by walking down the street, they mean they were in the street, not on the sidewalk next to
the street. Yeah, they were in the street, not on the sidewalk. Right, that's what I heard, yeah.
And the police drove up next to them and told them to get on the sidewalk. And basically, they talked back and didn't get on the sidewalk and started...
Well, what I understood was that what they said was like, look, we're almost home. We're almost there. Let us get there.
Right, right.
So they were talking back, yeah.
Yeah.
They didn't just go and get on the sidewalk.
They did not just do what they were. And then, you know, the police officer started being more confrontational about it. And they there was an incident where apparently the police officer opened his door and he hit the guy. And so the guy reacted. He, like, I don't know, he reached in. There was a scuffle. And then they ran. And then the two kids ran, and the police told them to stop, and they didn't stop, and the police shot them. And then...
Which, that's the one thing, I just think that's just not acceptable.
Let's continue, because he didn't just shoot once. He shot once, he was injured, he was not dead, he started holding up his hands. Apparently, the police officer caught up to him and shot him some more. At least that's one version of the story that I heard. There's a lot of fog of war type stuff around this over exactly what really happened. But a number of witnesses seem to agree that in the end, there may have been this scuffle, they may have ran, but in the end, at the time the kid was killed, the kid was attempting to surrender. He had his arms up, he was, you know, not any longer a threat.
And the officer knew the guy was unarmed.
Yeah.
And
I haven't heard anything saying specifically, you know, whether the officer thought there was another threat or whatever. I'm sure they're going to say something like that. But the bottom line is that this has then been followed. Well, first, before we get into the riots and demonstrations and all of the crazy stuff that's been happening in that town since this happened, I think you're right. And fundamentally, in both of these cases, you know, I read the description and I think two things. I think, one, the people who ended up getting shot were idiots because they did absolutely everything wrong. You know, in the one case, you're playing with an object that looks like a gun and pretending to shoot people in a store, and you're scaring people. And so the officer is going to come there under the assumption that you have a real weapon and is going to act accordingly.
Right.
In the other case, the officer came up to them and told them to do something, and they were defiant, they didn't do it, they were disrespectful, and they ran. Okay? All of these things are things that, you know, if you have any sort of thing that lists advice on what to do in an encounter with the police, number one on that list
is things that you shouldn't be doing. I totally agree.
Yeah, number one on that list is be respectful and do what you're told. Now, having said that, I don't think in either one of these situations, from the descriptions that I've heard, was lethal force actually necessary.
I agree. And why couldn't you tase them if that's the case or something? I mean, geez. I don't know. If you thought that you needed to subdue them and they weren't responding, then something non-lethal should have been what you were using, shoot them.
And at least in the first case, in the Walmart case, I can understand, you thought he had a real gun. You thought he was threatening people with a real gun. In the second case, they were dicks to you. They were rude. They didn't do what you told to. And maybe they were even in a little scuffle, but they were running away. Were they really a fucking danger to anybody?
Exactly.
They were just a bunch of kids, a bunch of two hot-headed kids who, for whatever reason, were not behaving well. And I grant, they were not behaving well, but they weren't doing anything that warranted, they're running, let's shoot them. The right answer to that is, they're running away, they're out of the street, oh well, instant over.
Right.
If you really wanted to make a big deal out of it, you make a report and you try to find them and arrest them later. You don't go and fucking shoot them. They weren't doing anything that was threatening at the time you shot them. Now, maybe when you were having the scuffle at the car, you were worried in some way that they were going to beat you up or do something or whatever. But that's not when the shooting happened. The shooting happened later when they were running away, And so it seems to me in both of these cases, but especially in the second case, the first one, you can understand saying, that's a tragic situation. The police officer involved is probably very sorry.
Maybe he didn't hear the guy saying he didn't have a gun. He was too focused on it. The adrenaline going. You think the guy's got a gun.
Exactly.
I don't know.
But in the second case, it seems completely like there's no way that's justified. It seems like now obviously maybe something else happened that hasn't been in the report so far. It's hard to tell in these situations, but based on everything that the witnesses have said so far, this was an unjustified killing. So the crowd, and this is also just to the dynamics of this situation. This is apparently a town that's something like 60-70% black. The police force is less than 20% black. It's mostly white.
Actually, what I heard today, exactly the number was out of 50 officers, there are two.
Right. And so it's obviously a fairly racially polarized situation. So there have been demonstrations on the street where, people have been coming out and, there were some riots and some looting. Absolutely, there were some of that. But from what I've read, the majority of what was going on were peaceful demonstrations. But the town has been bringing out all guns. They've been bringing out armored personnel carrier. All the police are in their riot gear. They've been telling the demonstrators to leave where they're demonstrating. They've been telling reporters to leave. I saw something this afternoon where they actually arrested a couple reporters for not leaving. There have been a few scuffles with police where the police have told people to move off the sidewalk, and the people have said, no, we don't want to move off the sidewalk, and there's been violence that occurred at that point. And it's basically, I haven't looked at what's happened today, but over the last couple days, it's been getting worse and worse. And you look at these pictures and you're like, what the fucking hell are we doing? Yo, like, what is the police...
I need you to hold 1 second because my wife is trying to find out where I am. So
okay, we'll take another break. We'll be back when Yvonne's back.
This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you will definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show.
All right. I'm back. Okay,
so, in any case, to me, the right response from the police here is probably... This, we're very sorry. This is a tragic incident. We are going to look into it. And, you know, and if it turns out the officer was in the wrong, he will be held responsible for it in full. And when there were demonstrations on the street, they should have let the demonstrations happen and let the people, you know, protest something that's frankly worth protesting. Now, the outright looting, okay. It would be good to have some police presence to stop the outright looting. Maybe it would have been good to bring in some outside help rather than that police department trying to take that action. But, you know, I saw a lot of pictures, too, of, you know, after they're looting, the local neighborhood folks coming to help clean up the mess and stuff, too. The bottom line is people are very angry about this. Some of that... anger is understandable. You don't want to really let the looting happen, but partially the reason that's happening is the police have been clamping down and not letting the peaceful protests happen either. And the police have been going 100% into cover their ass mode, as opposed to even acknowledging that the people might have a point here and that maybe they shouldn't have shot this kid.
Yeah, I know. You know, we still have a lot of that going on. I've seen
a number of people post, and I fully agree with this at this point. Like the sort of body cameras for police officers, they've got them in a lot of police cars at this point. Some jurisdictions have them on the police officers themselves now. Would help with this a lot. I saw some reports that there are some jurisdictions in California who've done exactly that, where basically every police officer, when they're on duty, they have a camera that's sort of built into their uniform around the chest area, and it's on at all, and it's on at all times while they're on duty, and it's cut incidents of police violence down by something like 80%.
I think it makes total sense. I mean, because over here, like, I've seen it, dashboard cameras and other such things. Like, so, for example, I mean, I know there's been disputes. I know it's like, I've seen disputes that definitely the camera has, like, certainly clarified what otherwise would have been a situation that would have turned into a he said, she said.
And by the way, this protects the good police as well. You know,
I totally agree because
there are all kinds of situations where, you know, the non-police officer will claim wrongdoing on the part of the policeman as well. But what this does is it gives a clear record of here is exactly what happened, and you can review it afterwards and see exactly, okay, you know, did the guy actually look like he was about to shoot you and this was justified? Or was the guy holding up his hands saying, no, don't hurt me, and you kicked him and shot him anyway? You know?
Right.
And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the only people, you know, there's, you know, in the case of like surveillance in general of the general public, I'm obviously not a big fan of all kinds of surveillance. But in the case of somebody doing their professional duty in a governmental job where they have the ability to use force against the public, I think it's an absolutely crucial piece of accountability, because it means that whatever people do sort of under the color of duty is auditable. And we know, are they exercising their power on behalf of the public in a way that the public approves of?
In a responsible manner.
And frankly,
agreed.
The officers who are prone to overreacting to situations need to be caught on it as soon as possible and thrown off the force.
Agreed.
Because you don't want people who are trigger happy. You don't want people who are looking for every possible opportunity to abuse their authority and beat up on people and bully people. Those aren't the people you want as police officers. You want the people who are going to be fair and going to be responsible and going to give people the benefit of the doubt, but do their duty to protect the public, but be careful and follow the rules and, you know, all of that sort of stuff. And, you know, I think the few municipalities who've experimented with it have shown that this has worked very well, because the police officer, even the police officers who might otherwise have a tendency to go overboard, are restrained because they know they're on camera. I think the time has come for this as a routine thing that should be, you know, in police offices all over the country. Somebody did an estimate of, you know, multiplying out the cost of a camera versus all the police officers in the country, and worked out that it would cost a pretty penny, something like $500 million for the whole country. But they compared it to the amount of federal grants for military-style SWAT-type equipment that's going out to police all over the country through federal subsidies anyway right now, and it's less. You know?
Yeah.
And so maybe, you know, stop having these. I mean, this is a freaking small town with 60 police officers. They have a SWAT team. They have anti-personnel carriers. Why? You know, and there have been a number of studies and articles before that also show that, you know, what typically happens with these kinds of things is, you know, the town says, hey, we need a SWAT team because, hey, you never know when we might have a hostage rescue situation that we have to do. And then, of course, hostage rescue situations are very, very rare. So they start looking for other reasons to use that force. And you don't need that. So cut it back on the spending of that. Outfit people with cameras. And the other thing is a number of, and this varies greatly state by state, but we should clarify on a national basis that it is every citizen's right to photograph and video and record police officers and any other public servants in the course of their duties, because it is in the public interest to know what they're doing on the government's dime. And so it absolutely positively should be the right of any citizen to record those activities at any time, as long as they are not actually obstructing the activities of those people.
Right. All right, well,
it's actually time to wrap up.
I think we should end the show now.
We're ending the show. Yeah, indeed. Alex, do you want to help say goodbye?
So what I
need to say first, and then we can say goodbye, is that, you know, thank everybody for again listening to Curmudgeon Corner. If you,
and that's all you need to say.
Not quite. If you if you made it through all of the road
goodbye,
noise.
Goodbye, everyone.
If you made it through all the road noise that in Yvonne's car, I appreciate it. Thank you for holding on there. As usual, you can reach me at ablesmay@ablesmay.com. And you can reach us both on Twitter. I'm at Ablesmay. Yvonne is at I am Bo.
No, you're not.
Yvonne is at I am Bo. I'm at Ablesmay. That's our Twitter addresses.
No, Daddy, you said Sam instead of Yvonne.
Oh, no, I think I meant Yvonne in any case. So that's it. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. And Yvonne, Alex, you want to say goodbye?
Bye.
Okay, bye everyone. Thank you, Yvonne, for joining us from the car. We'll see you all next week.
Thanks.
Forever. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.